You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
Hi, and welcome to a very, very special episode of Thumbtacks and Screwjobs to start off the new year. Rather than the normal back and forth between me and Gene, we've got something a little bit different. We've got an interview with Sarah Coulter. She's the writer of the script for Crossface, which is the upcoming Chris Benoit biopic. I mean, obviously, any wrestling fan remembers what happened with Chris Benoit and his family, the tragic murder-suicide. And this script has been knocking around for a while with a lot of word that it would or wouldn't get made. Well, finally, it was confirmed earlier in 2016 that Lexi Alexander will be directing the script. And we're really, really grateful for Sarah for coming in to talk to us about what she wrote with the script and the history of it. So please enjoy, because this is really quite remarkable. And I have the great pleasure of introducing our first ever in the studio guest on Thumbtacks and Screwjobs, and it's my profound pleasure to introduce Sarah Coulter, the scriptwriter on the upcoming Chris Benoit biopic, Crossface. Hi, Sarah.
Hello.
How are you doing this morning?
I'm good. Thank you for having me on your podcast.
Well, and the news of this, because this has been a film that kind of, there's been a lot of talk about there being a Chris Benoit biopic at some point, and who's going to do it and how it's going to be handled. And then kind of suddenly the news came out and, you know, it was announced that Lexi Alexander was going to be directing, and suddenly everybody was like, wait, because I think a lot of people have been waiting for Lexi to get a good meaty script and get something to really get her teeth into. She's one of these directors that people have wanted to see get something and been kind of frustrated she hasn't. So that picked up a lot of news. But you know, when did you hear, your script is actually exiting development hell?
I've been pretty closely, involved. I've stayed on top of it over the years, and close with one of the producers, so he's kept me in the loop, which is awesome. But when I heard that Lexi was coming on board, I was so excited because she's super talented, and I think she's the perfect choice for this because she knows what she's doing. She is like a fighter in real life, and she's super badass, and I couldn't imagine anyone else being in this director role for this film. I was really excited. It's an honor for me to even be involved at all.
So when did the idea for the script first come along, and how did you first get involved? Because it's one of these things that, I mean, I know exactly where I was when I heard Chris Benoit died. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that was, it
I do
was
too,
such
really
a,
weird.
So where were you?
I just remember seeing that news story on the computer, and I did not really know who he was at the time. Because I liked wrestling when I was really young. I was a huge Hulk Hogan and Bret the Hitman Hart fan.
Yeah, the Canadians. Gotta love the Canadians.
Yep. I feel like Bret is the ultimate rock star. I suppose over time it's proven. But, I even went to, like, we used to rent pay-per-view matches like back in the day, and I even went to a wrestling match with my mom when I was a kid. So I was a really big fan of it when I was little, and then I stopped. I got into other things, and so I didn't follow up with it. I didn't know about the evolution of like WCW and even ECW and all of that. So I didn't really know about Chris. And then when it came out that, you know, the tragedy of what had happened, it was pretty crazy. So I've always been drawn to dark stories and criminal psychology and things like that. So yeah, I still remember seeing that news story and just being like, wow, holy crap, that's pretty intense. And then a few years after that, so I guess it was around like 2009, 2010, I had been talking with my friend, who is one of the producers for Crossface. I had been talking with him about films he was trying to get developed, and, he brought this story to my attention, and I needed a refresher course. I was like, wait, I don't really know who that is. And then as soon as he started telling me, I remembered about the news story, and I was like, yes, this is perfect. This is exactly the kind of story I want to work on. So I had done a whole ton of research. I was watching wrestling, you know, wrestling matches on YouTube left and right, and just doing a lot of work to find out who he was and his background and all of that.
So that, I mean, that was one of the things I was wondering about, because for the longest time after the tragedy and after Chris killed his wife and his son and then committed suicide, mm-hmm. There was kind of a media blackout in a lot of ways. I mean, I know that the WWE basically, for the longest time, excised all his matches from their history. You know, he was pretty much struck from their history. And when you've got something where, you've got a corporation that pretty much owns the rights to a history in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
How hard was it to do that research, knowing that so much of this material that you might want to get access to, you've got a big company that's big parent company that's saying, like, nope. No, we don't want this to be seen.
Well, I don't think they own the rights to his life. And I would, I can't really say too much, but obviously we have to touch on wrestling. Obviously that's a huge part of who he was. But for me, I just thought it was very interesting to go into the psychology of what was going on with him over the years, like focusing more on his life. And the choices he made and the opportunities that were presented to him over the years. And I think we do a really good job of focusing on that and kind of having the wrestling there and present without getting ourselves in trouble, maybe with copyrights or things like that. I don't know. We have to be very careful. Obviously, that was always a concern, but...
Well, just to show you how careful people have to be, one of the things that when they started putting his matches back online, they had to go back and blur out the old WWF logo.
Yeah, and I heard that they put discretions up.
But the thing was that the WWE no longer owns the right to use the term WWF,
right?
Because of the deal with the World Wildlife Fund. So when once you walk into that realm of copyright. And who owns what? It's really complicated really fast.
I know that was a concern for the producers involved, and I think it's something that they're still very conscientious about and being careful with. But, that's not so much my thing. They're handling that, but it's...
They tell you what you can't do once you've done it.
Basically, yeah. But I think we've done a very good job. I know that there's a lot of wrestling fans who are... upset about this even getting made, which is anytime I've seen that, I'm very confused by that, because I've scratched my head and thought, why these people are wrestling fans, why are they seemingly defending the industry as opposed to defending the wrestler who is dead, who killed his family, potentially because of, and most likely because of, injuries sustained in that industry? Why is that story not supposed to be told? Why shouldn't it be told? And we think it should, because it's a very important story.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, it's at the end of the day, it is a, to a certain degree, this is a true crime story. This is about what happened to a family. And, you do have these guys who are going out and putting their body on, and the kind of tacit admission with wrestling now that a lot of people are saying, like, don't do certain things.
Right.
Like, certain, you shouldn't be doing this. And, I do ring announcing for a local wrestling promotion, Inspire Pro Wrestling. Mm. And, it's amazing watching guys come back and, like, the stuff that out front you go, that must have really hurt. And then they're backstage and they're just like, yeah, okay, no, I'm fine. And then it's the things where you go, that didn't look like much.
Right.
But that's the stuff that takes the toll. It's like those impacts. Yeah. And the way Chris performed and all those diving headbutts and people, now, I mean, those are pretty much verboten in the industry. Nobody, you see those so rarely, because I think people have gone, well, that was such a factor.
I believe that, like, Congress came down on the industry after he had passed and after everything that had happened. I think the big thing was, like, no more headshots, no more chairs to the head and stuff like that. And, I think that was the biggest thing for me having worked on this, was now I respect this industry so much more. I learned so much about it, and I know the format has changed now. It's definitely, like, more of a family friendly format now. But for Chris and Eddie and, like, all these other people that he came up with within that industry, it was fake, and yet they were getting hurt left and right, and they couldn't really do anything about it. They had to work, or they would get fired. And they had to stay big, or they would get fired. They were really hurting themselves, and a lot of them are dead now because of it. So I just found that, like, extremely, extremely interesting and intriguing and very dark for an industry that's flash.
Yeah.
It's not real sport, and yet it's dark. It's a dark thing.
So one of the things I was wondering about was, like, I mean, because you wrote the first draft of this script, when was that?
Oh, that was in 2011.
Wow.
Yeah. It was a while ago, yeah.
Although I've known a bunch of people who 5 years is pretty good
I remember hearing that I think Wolf of Wall Street took 8 years to get made. Films just take a while
to get made. And, you know, over that time, I think a lot of what we've known has changed, a lot of what we've known about traumatic brain injury has changed. So, and because clearly that's part of what you're looking at, has that changed in the script over time? Of like, yeah, have you gone back and gone, okay, well, something works differently? And how different is what's going to be going in as the shooting script to that first version?
Well, I don't think much has had to change, because I think that soon after he died, that was, you know, at first everyone was talking about steroid abuse left and right and trying to blame it on that. But then obviously, as you know, probably everybody knows, Chris Nowinski, who was a former wrestler, he basically begged Chris's father to get an autopsy done on his brain, and they found out that he had CTE, which... and I think that, you know, apparently he had the brain of like an 85-year-old with dementia, and he was a 40-year-old man.
Yeah.
So it was pretty bad, but, you know, that alone, that was bad. But I don't think with him you could pinpoint it on any one thing. There were obviously, he was abusing steroids. He was apparently abusing other substances, alcohol, drugs, apparently. And then on top of that, I think arguably almost as important as the brain trauma was that he was apparently suffering from very serious depression from watching his friends die left and right over only a few short years, I would say. So I think working with all of that, he was just kind of a ticking time bomb. And I don't think much of that is anything someone can argue. I mean, he was definitely in a bad shape.
And that's the thing, I think, you know, you look back and I think the timing was always significant. It was, you know, so close after Eddie Guerrero, and like their careers had just had been, you know, they're the two guys who were not supposed to make it to the point in the industry they made it. And when they made it, you know, it really felt like such a big thing for the fans. And that's why I think their deaths, you know, I think hurt so much more than a lot of the other guys, where it's like, yeah, this is sad.
Like the underdogs, yeah.
But like, you know, these are the guys who like, they made it and they weren't supposed to. And then, you know, they just go in such quick succession. And it really seems like that, you know, and the famous WrestleMania moment where, you know, Eddie wins and Chris walks out and everybody's like, this is going to be, you know, these two guys are going to go straight at it. And it's like, it's not. It's this pure emotional moment that's so important.
And it felt very real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just them. It's like these two guys, they've beaten the odds, and then the odds catch up in just the most horrible ways. And it probably,
it doesn't seem real, like, because it's such a crazy story. And yeah, it's just like, I hate to use the word fascinating, intriguing, but yeah, it's very sad.
Yeah. And so, I mean, obviously I don't want to get into too deep into spoiler territory or like, yeah, but, so I mean, when, what kind of time frame within Chris's life you're looking at in the script, you know, and yeah, because obviously you've got a whole life, and you know, you could do, you know, a full feature just on his time in Japan, you know, or his time in WCW. So I mean, what kind of time period do you really look at in the script?
I remember we had to look at everything, because there was obviously a lot with Japan. There was a lot with his time in WCW and in WWF, WWE. It was kind of hard. There was so much to his story. It was kind of hard to pick and choose what to focus on.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would say, you know, like from the time he became a professional wrestler up until his death, I mean, that's his story. So that would, you know, that basically is what we had to focus on. I know that's kind of a general, but yeah,
Well, it's one of the, yeah, I think you've got to, that's the thing, you've got to give the context, because it's, you know, the industry changes so much from somebody like him, you know, being able to be, having to go to Japan, or someone like Chris Jericho, mm-hmm. you know, never going to make it in the States because they didn't like guys that size, and comes back from Japan, and you just can't ignore these guys.
Right.
You
know, well, just, Japan was legit.
That yeah. was, there's some scary men over there.
Yeah. Well, I had read and heard some stories about what they were doing over there, and it was scary.
Yeah.
It seemed very real.
So, you know, there's a large amount of material that's been published. You know, were you able to talk to anybody who knew Chris? Because that's one of the, a lot of people, I think in like the past year or two, I think a lot of people knew him have found, there's the emotional distance now. Mm-hmm. And people are starting to be a little bit more forthcoming. And I think people who worked with him in professionally, I think they're a little bit more, you know, I know Chris Jericho said more recently, you know, those guys, they feel like it's far enough away they can be, you know, because right. it's a tough thing for them to handle as well. Mm-hmm. You know, so I understand why they didn't want to. And people were saying things like, oh, should Benoit go in the Hall of Fame? And they're right, like, I'm not ready for that emotional discussion. I'm right. still dealing with the fact that I don't know what happened to my friend.
Right. Exactly.
This guy I liked or loved, and like, he does this horrible thing. And it's like, so, you know, how much were you able to reach out to people who were willing to talk to you, or how much of it was from secondary sources or other, you know, were there any any core books or works that you were really, really working from?
It's funny, over the years that I had been working on it, because I did go back to it a lot, and also the very talented Jake Goldberger, who's another just awesome writer, he was working on it as well. I don't know about him, but for me, I had just, like, met random people who were involved with wrestling, a lot of interesting stories from them, but mostly it was secondary sources. I mean, I know more recently as well, Chris's sister-in-law had, former sister-in-law, had done an interview, and she was talking about his condition, and I think she as well was talking about how you can't just blame it on brain trauma. There was just a cocktail of things going on with him. So for me, just listening to a lot of interviews and hearing stories from other people. Yeah, but I didn't talk directly to anybody involved. I kind of wanted to stay separate from it as well, because I didn't want to be too influenced. Either way, I just wanted to kind of just dig in and just read and listen to as much as possible and kind of work with that.
Which is the classic true crime format in a lot of ways. You know, it doesn't mean nobody's knowing. I mean, people say, oh, well, you can't do a story like this unless you talk to people. And I was like, well, there's a lot of good work on, like, you know, the Torso Killer from the 30s with, where nobody involved with that is still alive, but there's still great work right. been done on stuff like that. And it's like, you know, you don't suddenly find, you know, it's, I don't think in some ways it's not, yeah, like you said, you can end up being swayed by one conversation that's right. not necessarily.
And, you know, if it was a documentary, that would be obviously a very different story. You know, you know, when you're working on a true story, when you're working on a biopic of somebody, you have to find that balance between, truth and adding drama to it, you know, because you want to move people, even if it's through negative emotions, positive. You want people to get something out of it, and so I feel like, you know, there had to be drama infused within the story here and there, but we tried to stay as accurate as possible. I mean, that was like a very big thing. To not sway. And the interesting thing though is, like, the more we found out, the more that I found out about the story, we'd be starting to work on, like, a dramatic element to the story and trying to, like, okay, let's spice the scene up. And then we'd find out that what we were starting to write about was stuff that really happened, was stuff that actually happened. And we were like, wow, we weren't even far off. Like,
yeah.
it was weird. I mean,
I think you get a feel after a while, you know, having talked to people who've done this kind of film. It's like, you know, you know where the next, you can see what the missing piece in the jigsaw puzzle is. Like, mm-hmm. it's kind of instinctual after a while.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, that's what we'd be, getting ahead of ourselves and trying to, go somewhere with the scene and then find out that maybe, like, conversations or situations that we put our characters in, and it's weird to call them characters, but yeah. Then we would find out that it was very real. Like, things that we were writing about, like, we find out were actually going on behind the scenes.
Obviously, like anybody, he changes over time. You know, those that last period is a particularly bleak one, and clearly leads to this a murder suicide. There's nothing
right.
There's nothing
that excuses.
Yeah, but I mean, what's your take on Chris Benoit as a person? You know, after all doing all this research and working the script, what do you think he was like as a person?
Well, I think he was a very respected wrestler, and I think he was a very hard worker, and I think that work was his life. I don't know. I mean, I think many wrestling fans know that anybody that knew him said he was a very, very good person over the years, and he was very well respected. I know from the research and everything, as I'm sure other people do know as well, that he had, a previous marriage and he had maybe issues in his personal life, but I think everybody does. For me, like I said earlier, I think he was a ticking time bomb. I think when you mix, substance abuse with gradual brain trauma and eventual depression, you're dealing with someone who couldn't control themselves anymore. And I think that's what's very interesting to me, is that to see someone just get worse over time and be this normal person who worked hard for his family to becoming a murderer, how does that happen? Why does that happen? And that was always very interesting about his whole life to me. So I just think he was someone who lost control.
Yeah. Well, Sarah, this has been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on the show. We really do appreciate it.
Thank you.
We'll keep an eye on this over time, and really looking forward to seeing Crossface.
Thank you. I am too. Thank you very much.
Thank you.